In every odd-numbered year, members of the General Assembly face one task that can't be avoided or deferred. Unless they want state government to shut down, legislators have to craft a two-year budget. Now, in theory, the process unfolds over months with input from stakeholders and taxpayers during a series of formal public hearings. Usually in practice, though, the final budget is hammered out in the session's closing hours, mostly behind closed doors, by a House Senate Conference Committee. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this week's show, we'll explore one of the General Assembly's most structured yet most arcane processes. Don't go away. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. And joining me to make sense of all the hubbub over dollars and cents, our Republican Representative Tim Brown of Crawfordsville, chairman of the Budget Writing House Ways and Means Committee. Democratic Representative Greg Porter of Indianapolis, the ranking minority member of that committee. Republican Senator Eric Basler of Washington, the ranking member of the Senate Appropriations Committee. And Democratic Senator Eddie Melton of Gary, the ranking minority member of that panel. Thank you all for being here to talk about what, by definition, is the most important topic, because it has to happen with starts and stops with the budget, right? Let me start, Tim Brown, with you, because you're a physician. So let me start by asking you for some free medical advice. What are we going to do with this extra COVID relief money? Indiana's share is estimated to be $5.8 billion, of which $3 billion or so would go to the state. Another $200 million would go to state's capital projects plan and so forth, the rest going, of course, to local and county governments. What do you do with that? That's a lot of money.
Well, I think it's opportunity for the state of Indiana. I mean, one of the things about Indiana is we're number one in the Midwest, and so we've been very resilient through this recession and pandemic and able to bounce back very, very well. And so we look at this federal money as one-time spending. Is there infrastructure we need to spend it on, which are highways? Or is it water and sewer infrastructure that we need to spend it on so that we can help every community and citizen throughout the whole state?
Of course, a lot of the things you just mentioned there about infrastructure, they're going to be taken care of with the next stimulus package. The other two, I was joking before, you guys aren't going to have a budget for the next decade at the rate we're going. Who should make the decision, by the way, about how?
It will be a joint decision, because some of the money won't come in until after we're gone from session at the end of April. And then it will be an evaluation. It'll be a recommendation through the budget committee, a small budget committee of which Representative Porter and Senator Melton are members of. And we'll have a review process and kind of a yes or no say on that.
Does that make sense to you, Greg Porter? I mean, both in terms of what he wants to spend the money on and how it should be divvied up?
Well,
who controls how it's divvied up?
That's the point.
Yeah,
who controls the money? I mean, when you're on the budget committee, and we vote, but you know, they're always going to win. You know, in regards to the budget committee, because it's they're people for the most part, with a couple of players, a couple of alternate players. I think with the $3 billion coming into the state. You're right. I just hope that we don't continue to bank it and continue to build a surplus that we have. I think it should go, yes, toward water and infrastructure like that, but I think it also should go through capital needs in regards to human infrastructure for individuals, infrastructure of capital of individuals within our community.
Focused primarily on COVID or you mentioned some of the issues were COVID-related or businesses
right.
that were taxed, not in a fiscal sense, but burdened by this and other
right, because,
challenges that they might not have faced.
Exactly, because we try to do two or three pieces of amendments to take care of small businesses, not corporations, but small businesses. We also try to look at individuals and minorities, health disparities, and issues like that. We need to take care of the human infrastructure with those dollars also. Yes, they're only one-time dollars, but I've seen us take those one-time dollars and they kind of stretch out. And, you know, with us being a quote-unquote AAA, you know, bonding community and all the people coming in and et cetera, we should do more for people.
Eric Basler, the House budget as it showed up on your doorstep, did have funding for students who were perhaps had fallen behind, needed remediation because of the pandemic. Money for, there was a grant program for small businesses. So there were these, added up, it's probably between $200 and $300 million, I would guess. If with this federal money, is it just a matter of swapping out the federal money for those state dollars to free them up? Or is this a situation where now you have latitude to do more in that area of relief?
I think there's a few things going on, especially when it comes to education and learning loss. I think it would be a good idea to use federal dollars when possible to try to address those issues and then back those up if we still need it with some state dollars. Otherwise, we can use those state dollars on other priorities that the state would have. One thing we do need to be careful of when we look at these COVID relief dollars is as Representative Porter pointed out, they're one-time dollars, so it's not like we could build in ongoing costs related to these funds that are available. I think infrastructure makes a good sense. When I was on the city council down in Washington, we talked about sewer issues and waterworks issues, and there's a lot of buried pipe throughout the state of Indiana that is 75 years old, 50 years old, 100 years old. There could be some opportunities to do some things there over the next few years with those dollars, which would be helpful to communities really throughout the state of Indiana.
And Eddie Melton, your thoughts on this too. Do you think there's going to be a fight over how to spend these dollars, or is there going to be this kind of gentlemen's and ladies' agreement about how the money is spent and who gets to say, hey, here's where we're gonna do with it?
Right. Let me agree with everyone thus far that this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. These dollars can be transformational for communities and for the state of Indiana. When we look at investing both in human capital and capital improvements from infrastructure perspective, let's take the human capital perspective. We can look at really revamping and innovating our workforce development in K-12. Knowing that these dollars are not sustainable and these are one-time, we can close that learning gap for a lot of communities that are struggling. We can get more competitive individuals prepared for the workforce that's looking to grow the state of Indiana. We know we have an opportunity where we've already made some great investments through infrastructure in 2017. But this is a unique time and opportunity with the federal dollars. And I think we should approach our budget knowing we have these funds coming down a pipeline, but still knowing our obligation as a state to craft a budget that's going to address the needs of Hoosiers.
So the 100, I think it's what, 130, 150, when you start talking about millions, Everett Dirksen said a million here, a million there. You would spend, there's that much now set aside, at least in the House budget, for remediation for students. Is that just a starting point? Am I hearing you say that you want to go a lot further than that?
Absolutely. I think when we look at our demand for workforce development as well, and I have to highlight that because as we're talking about attracting businesses, continuing to attract businesses, we're going to have a ready workforce in every part of the state. And that's getting folks up to speed from an innovative perspective. And I think Indiana can do a much better job in terms of getting folks work ready. But the K-12 issue, there were already issues before COVID-19.
And, of course, the budget already has the regional grants, too, for economic development.
Yeah, exactly. And Senator Miller hit on it. $150 million, $160 million, that's fine for learning loss. However, let us not forget that there was already a gap in regards to students, minority students, and poor students in throughout the state of Indiana. So what this is, it's kind of a catch-up and help give a boost for those students that had that learning loss over the last year. But we also had to make up some of that loss that was there prior to that also. Because if you remember 10 years ago, we talked about in education, addressing that gap and moving it up and things like that. So it's very important that we not forget what we didn't have so we can bring everybody into a line.
I would say, though, there's a difference in this year in the pandemic and the learning loss there. It's very real. You talk to every educator and kids are falling behind. But I think the learning gains that we've had, we were ranked in the bottom third of the nation in national academic achievement scores, and now we're in the top 10. So this is where parents have gotten involved in their kids and helped them achieve a great increase in academic achievement over the last decade.
How much of the, some would argue and have argued that part of the way to get in addition to having good testing and good test prep, is teachers who know how to prepare students. And of course, we've all talked at length about the teacher shortage or the prospect of a looming teacher shortage and what many would argue is underpayment on average of the state's teachers. And yet this budget doesn't really address that, despite a gubernatorial panel that spent, 18 months looking at this issue. Why not, with all this extra money, throw dollars? And I know that you don't directly pay teachers. We'll stipulate that. Yeah. But there are ways you could kind of put that pot of money out there and apply public pressure. Why not do that with all the extra?
Well, there's over $380 million that go to K-12 education over the next 2 years. And it's a local decision. I mean, you talk to local teachers, and I ask them to a person, have you gone to the school board meeting? Well, no, why should we? Because it's the school board that determines what your pay is, and ask them to raise your base salary and get it higher going up.
Some states, it's done at the state level, but
yes,
clearly not.
Yeah, but yeah. Here it's done at the local level. And I think your point is well taken. Teaching is going to change. I mean, the hybrid classes that we have now that are computer and in-person based are going to be the future. Parents are going to want a hybrid offered to their children going forward. There's going to be an increased demand for this different kind of learning. So what's it going to be like to be a teacher going forward?
Eric Vassler, you knew I was coming to you because are you all, in addition to the title I gave you at the beginning in the introduction, you're also the chairman, of course, of the subcommittee that deals specifically with school funding within the Appropriations Senate Appropriations Committee. $380 million, roughly, again, give or take, in K-12 dollars. That's what's in the House plan that came to you. But a third of that, and I guess this is where the controversy probably arises, would be designated not for traditional public schools, but for a new assistance program, scholarship assistance program for students, a school choice program, including parochial school vouchers and so forth, that would allow a family of four earning, I think, up to, about $170,000 a year to qualify for this, quote-unquote, assistance. Is that the way to spend these dollars?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here, and we could spend the entire program just talking about K-12 education, K-12 funding. One thing that I'll say is last week we had a meeting, K-12 subcommittee had a meeting, and we ended up having, as a matter of fact, Senator Milton was on the committee also, and I think maybe we had somewhere around 60 people that came in and testified. And we had people from all different types of educational situations. We had everything from homeschoolers that testified, people that send their kids to charter schools, to private schools, traditional public schools, virtual schools. And I guess a couple takeaways that I had was, two main takeaways. One was that all of the different types of education programs we have in the state of Indiana are really doing great things for young people and really helping our children out. Another takeaway was we still have work to do. We still send too many kids to either a two-year college or a four-year college that need remediation. So there's still work to be done. We've made great progress, as Representative Brown talked about, but we still need to continue to push it forward. And then the other takeaway was, and we're digging in and trying to take a real serious look at this, and it has to do with the area of complexity. I won't bore you with the minutia of that.
This has to do with maybe students' as English as a second language or learning disabilities. It's the factor that's supposed to address funding for those.
Yes, yeah, people that are low to moderate income, things along those lines. And so it came through, and again, when I talk to educators, it tends to be more expensive to educate children that are in the foster care system, that are on TANF and SNAP. And then there's also additional costs related to English language learners, special education. And so we're trying to take a deep dive on that. We've spent about a year and a half looking at how we measure complexity, and I won't bore you with the minutia of that, but how we measure it. And although it's not perfect, we were not able to find something that was better. We're going to continue to look at that and see if there's something else we can do, not for this budget, but for 2 years from now. We'll continue to use the same complexity measure that we've used in the past for this budget, but we're starting to really need to dig into that longer term to see if there's a better way to measure that.
Let me mentioned all these people that came in with strong feelings, yep, that testified. Where's your head right now? Are you liking that where a third is going to this use? Or just real quickly, because I want others to weigh in, but or do you think that that's too much.
I'm agnostic as to where those dollars go. I think it's up to the parents and the families to make those decisions on how best to educate their children. Again, we had some great stories from all the different types of education that's available in Indiana, the good things that are happening, great things with young people. So I'm a big proponent of let's let families decide what is best for their children, what is best for their family situation, and then that's where the dollars end up. So if people have a beef with where those dollars end up, then they don't have a beef with me. They've got a beef with the families and the parents.
It's almost as cryptic as the governor's comment in the State of the State address where he basically said, I like public schools and I wouldn't hurt them, but we don't want to have people suffer because of the zip codes in which they live. You were want to weigh in here, Greg.
Well, I want to weigh in with Senator here. It's about $170 million that's going through that other
one-third.
About $170 million, yeah. Yes, sir. But I think one thing that Senator Bastrick really hit on was looking at TANF and SNAP, which those numbers for those students are decreasing. And so I think the complexity index is very important to give those students more assistance, and maybe we may want to revisit free and reduced lunch as part of that equation. But because I believe the SNAP dollars and TANF dollars and foster care components are decreasing. So,
is this, Senator? What do you make of this? I mean, this is, we were talking before the show about how so many issues aren't necessarily R versus D, but rural versus urban, and large portions of the state don't have private schools that would qualify for these voucher programs. They tend to be concentrated in our most populous communities. Does that shape your take on this? Or you represent one of the most populous areas, certainly, in the state.
Well, I'll start by saying I think everyone in the legislature, especially on this panel, genuinely want our children to do well, right? It's how we get there and how we fund it. I think we may have difference of opinions on that. I want to touch a little bit on the beginning part of that question that you asked earlier about from the teacher perspective. I think adding additional new dollars so it can get more to the base for school corporations to free up funds so they can pay teachers more, I think is an opportunity as well. Because we know that one of the things that I took away from the school funding hearing, which Senator Bastrick ran very well, is that equity and equality stood out in the conversation from many of our educators across the entire state, no matter it was charter or traditional public education, equity and equality. And I think in this particular budget, we have a unique chance to kind of bring everyone up from an equal perspective. But also we have to acknowledge that everyone is not starting out at the same funding point or equity point when we look at the complexity index and the type of students that we're trying to educate. So I think it's a holistic approach and how we're going to get there. When we look at the voucher perspective, my community has, we have several different options, right? Our traditional public educational school system, we're increasing in student attendance in our ADM, right? Which is a great thing. But we have a lot of options for families to choose. So I'm always cautious on how we allocate resources because I know that at any given time, depending on how things shift, that families can choose one option over the other. So it's always a competitiveness within one particular community that's been a
somebody
tier.
Wins, somebody loses. Did you want to weigh in on the school issue
We touch complexity on is a measurement. What's the difference between Indianapolis public school system and Zionsville? What's the difference between Crawfordsville and Fort Wayne? How do they measure differently? I mean, I would agree. Teachers have come in and says it takes us difference to teach this complex student. Okay, but if you get a second one, does it double? Because you're teaching, you're using the same method, you're using the same structure, you're using the same teacher, it hasn't doubled your cost to teach two complex students. And yet they do get double the money for two complex students. Our schools don't have the money to track the individual students. They go into their general unified operating fund. And so what it does is it just measures the difference. I guess I would say free and reduced lunch over time has been bastardized by the federal government because you get community rating. A whole school, 100% of the kids can be free and reduced lunch. Is 100% of the kids, complex kids? No. So it skews money to them when it shouldn't.
So complexity is complex. I think we can agree. Hey, I handled the truck weight formula last week's show, so I can handle any formula you throw at me. I got axles and all that stuff down. We could talk about schools. Clearly, that's more than half the budget. Another chunk that you don't really have much to do with is Medicaid. It goes up, and you need to go up with it. So we're at the margins here of what you can do. We talked about some of those things. Revenue enhancement, I'm hesitant to even bring this up because it's just such a rarity that your caucus would support, for instance, a tax increase of some sort. But it's not really for the budget. But we should probably say the cigarette tax increase. Everybody says it's not about the budget. It's about curbing a behavior that we don't want and was underscored during the pandemic, just why we don't want it in terms of our health standards.
Yeah,
if that's the case, though, why isn't it going into those funds? Isn't it going into the general fund right now? And it's at 50 cents, I think, as opposed to the $2 a pack that some had suggested.
Yes, it's 50.5 to raise us to $1.50 even. It's using for general fund for Medicaid services. We've had over 200,000 people join Medicaid since the pandemic started over a year ago. And the federal government in their money given to the state says you can't necessarily look at people who have gained in income and, trim the rolls or roll people off. It is against the federal law now during this pandemic to have people go off of Medicaid, so they're staying on. So we have the size of the city of Fort Wayne. Fort Wayne's to about over 200,000, but we have 200,000 more people.
But it wouldn't go to support. You wouldn't be counting on it as a fiscal crutch because if it works according to plan, that revenue stream disappears.
Yes.
I mean, by definition.
Yes.
Does anybody, again, I'm trying to get to a lot of topics, does anybody have strong feelings about whether it should be $2, as some advocates said, or $1 or 50 cents? There are people who say 50 cents isn't even worth it.
Well, I think no matter if it's 50 cents or $2, from my perspective, House Democrats and Indiana Black Legislative Caucus, in my Indiana Minority Health Coalition, it should go toward health care, period. I mean, one thing which is in our rearview mirror, we have over $550 million in Medicaid reserve funds that we utilize to fill out the budget for 2020, okay? And so, I mean, we always have money in our Medicaid reserves along with tuition reserves. You know, it's part of our $1.9 billion surplus that we have right now. But I think the money should go toward health care, period.
Only a couple of minutes. Anybody want to weigh in on this? I know one group, for instance, there's advocates for mental health recipients of services and substance abuse. They said that the budget, there's a bit of a gap there of $20-some million, but I think the suggestion is that federal dollars would come in there. Should people be alarmed if they receive mental health services or substance abuse services that it's not in the budget this moment?
And that was one of my concerns when we received the House budget, was the cut of $26 million in the mental health and addiction services. With COVID and what we've seen with a rise of suicide across the nation, actually, in a rise of needs of individuals needing those type of services, I think that's something that we should make a priority when we talk about health care. And when we look at the cigarette tax, in my opinion, I think if it's to curb a behavior, part of that is hitting from a fiscal perspective and raising it to a point where folks are saying they can't afford to smoke anymore, right? I think that's going to be a part of curbing that behavior.
I have so much to talk about. I guess so people don't panic, the notion is that federal dollars would go in to fill that gap. Let me just close with this, Eric Vassler. Is there any – we think we know all the cards that are on the table when conferees, those four people get together and really hammer it out in the final hours. But sometimes there's a surprise. Riverboat Gaming kind of came out of nowhere. Funding for the State Museum, which wasn't mentioned at any point. I think it was 96 was in there. Do we know everything, or can you tell us just give us a little hint what the surprise is going to be this time, if there is one? What should we be looking for?
I guess I would be surprised if there's a surprise. I mean, we've been working on the House version of the budget since it came over to us about a month or so ago, and obviously we're going to tweak it here and there and make some changes. And I think that we're taking a serious look at the cigarette tax that we're talking about. Also, I think there's a good reason to put some tax in place with respect to vaping, whether you do that at the retail or wholesale, and there's closed systems and open systems. This also is complicated, like most things we deal with.
Right, now, I think it's at a 10% excise tax, which, again, subject to, I guess, some tweaking.
But I think what we want to do is we kind of want to use those to try to discourage behaviors that lead to a lot of health care cost, smoking and vaping and so forth. We can rely upon them in the short run as revenue, but we can't do so long run because we hope they're declining revenue source. Because
then you'll have done your job if that doesn't have any, if it has zeros in that account after a while.
Right.
Thank you all. Obviously, we're just scratching the surface. I feel like I'm just clearing my throat. We could keep going and going. Thank you, though, for sharing your obvious expertise and your passion about these issues. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Tim Brown of Crawfordsville, Democratic Representative Greg Porter of Indianapolis, Republican Senator Eric Bassler of Washington, and Democratic Senator Eddie Melton of Gary. On the heels of the president's big infrastructure bill, we'll talk about infrastructure. We're building bridges on the next Indiana Lawmakers. Time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana Lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hannah News Service. Ed, normally when we talk to folks about the budget, it's very contentious. Where were all the knives today?
I think that the COVID money certainly helps. You know, you've got an extra $3 billion to start throwing around. You know, hey, you're not arguing about things at the margins necessarily. But, you know, the budget, John, as you know, is always about two things. It's about that bottom line amount, and it's about education. And we heard today in the roundtable a lot of talk about education. What you didn't hear that you're going to see is that 1005, that ESA bill, the education savings accounts measure, is going to be thrown into the budget, and that's going to be a contentious issue in the end. We're also going to hear a little bit more, I think, from Representative Porter toward the end of discussions about the lack of money for human capital that will be appropriated by Republicans, and I think he's going to push for a lot more of the longer-term spending on that than he might have alluded to, you know, during the panel today. He's been very, very passionate about that over the course of his career, and I think he's going to push for that in the final week or two of the session.
Do most people come away from this session declaring victory and patting themselves on the back, would you say? I mean, again, that $3 billion certainly helps a lot.
Sure, but the budget is always going to be, or has turned into in recent years, more of a policy document. And I think that depending upon where some of that money is directed and how that policy comes out is who's going to be declaring victory this year or not.
And no question, this is something the governor can put his signature on, even if he's not happy with a little bit here and a little bit there. There's no question of that. This is everybody's on board in terms of the House supermajorities and Senate supermajority.
Absolutely. And I think that it's going to be interesting, too, to watch in the future, perhaps not this year, but going forward, you know, the battle between the House and the Senate for supremacy on the budget as some of the players change and people retire and move on.
Very good, Ed. We have to leave it there. As always, I appreciate your insight. We'll see you next week. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. I thank you for joining us. Until next week, take care.